I am not ashamed of the gospel. And you hear the Jewish music because this was from the pen of a Jewish man named Rabbi Paul of Tarsus. I am not ashamed of the gospel, he wrote, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. What a wonderful message that God really desires to bring Jews and Gentiles not only to himself in reconciliation, but to reconcile us to one another. And we want to welcome you to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We come to you every weekday at the same time here on Faith Talk 1500, and we're delighted to do so. And we're coming to you live today from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500. And we've got a very special guest with us this afternoon. You know, when I came in earlier, there was a box of chocolates over in the staff room. And I know this means nothing to you listening on radio, so you just have to listen to me talk about chocolate. But every once in a while, you get one of those box of chocolates that when you open it up, the lid tells you with a little nice diagram what each piece of chocolate is, what kind it is, what the filling is. And, you know, I like those best because if I'm only going to allow myself one or two pieces of chocolate, one, because I value my health, if you're only going to have one piece of chocolate and you get something and it wasn't quite what you wanted, it's a little disappointing. I mean, chocolate is always good, but you want what you want. You want to be able to count on it. And today I had one of those things where you could look and see exactly what you were getting, so I got what I wanted. Well, our guest today, his name is Marty Goetz, and you could put on any of his CDs, any track, never heard it before, and you are guaranteed to have a beautiful, worshipful, Bible-centered, and God-honoring experience of music. And so we want to welcome him to the show today. Marty, welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher.
Well, thank you so much. Are you telling them that they can only buy one of our products at a time?
I'm telling them you're like chocolate. Your music, it's delicious.
I'm kidding. That was very sweet of you to say that, and no pun intended.
I was
a little taken aback because I can't eat just one piece of chocolates, which is why we don't have those boxes.
Okay, very good. I just give mine away. I just avoid the temptation altogether. Well, let's talk about this. You were born in the mid, actually in the late 50s or early 50s, and even as a youngster, when you're 13 years old, it's 1965, you're having your bar mitzvah, and you grew up in Cleveland, right?
I did, Cleveland, Ohio.
Wow.
Near Detroit. We used to get the Detroit radio stations.
All the best musicians are from the Midwest. You know
that. That's right. right across Lake Erie.
Well, who would have figured that this nice Jewish boy at age 13 up there at the Bima, singing his Haftarah portion, 20 years later would be singing in Central Park as the special guest of Billy Graham, the evangelist? Who would have figured that?
Yeah, I know. Who would have? Especially since we never really talked about Jesus or anything like that, except that he wasn't the Messiah. He wasn't God. He wasn't for the Jewish people. And so there, you know, pretty much we left him alone. He left us alone, and that was the way it was.
Well, now talk to us a little bit about those years in between the time of your bar mitzvah and, you know, of course, like most Jewish families, Jesus is just not someone we really talk about. But yet your musical abilities developed very early on, and you ended up going to New York and doing music up in the Catskills. Tell us a little bit about how you got into music, and then how I'll let you tell your story of how Jesus made you kosher. Tell us a little bit about your story growing up.
Well, I grew up in Cleveland, as you said, and I don't know how you were raised, but I was raised in a conservative Jewish home, which basically is it's the middle ground between Reformed and Orthodox. But my grandparents on my mother's side were very Orthodox. For people listening, that would mean walking to temple on Saturday, not driving, keeping kosher, which is not eating shellfish nor any pork products or having milk with meat, which is a rabbinic, basically a rabbinic governing rule that you don't have milk and meat together. And so they pretty much observed Torah as best they could. My grandfather was a Orthodox man. His father, who was from Poland, his parents were from Poland, and they were what were called tzaddiks, which were, people have seen pictures of them or maybe seen them on the street, you know, with the long side curls called payas and a big black hat and a long beard. And as little kids, we thought he was kind of scary because, you know, we didn't know why he looked that way, and he was pretty stern, or at least to us he seemed to be. But he was a man who studied Talmud, which is the rabbinic commentaries on the Torah. And my grandfather was raised in Poland under that tutelage, but he was not as Orthodox as his father, and then in turn my mother was not as Orthodox as her father. So we were raised in a conservative home, which means I was bar mitzvahed, and I went to Hebrew school, and I went to temple every Saturday, and I kept kosher insofar as when we ate pepperoni pizza, which was not kosher, we ate it on paper plates so that we wouldn't defile our silverware or our plates in the home. So we honored and respected our background, but by that time, you know, the 50s, as you said, you were gracious to say late 50s. It was more the early 50s. And you know, it was Leave It to Beaver and Father Knows Best and TV dinners and colored television. And so, you know, I was fully Americanized. So by the time I grew up, I was Jewish, and I had a real strong sense of Jewish, and I knew I wasn't a Christian. But I did have a best friend who was a Catholic who went to another school. And went away to college, Carnegie Mellon University, as an English major, never thinking about religious things, just wanting to do the things of this world that other young men were doing, you know, girls and a few little pharmaceutical products that were not over-the-counter, if you know what I mean. And, you know, I was just one of those children of the 60s, although I was never fully invested in it. I wasn't a Woodstock type of person, but I was wanting all that stuff that my generation was doing. And so I went to college and graduated in 4 years. But in college, I auditioned to be the onstage piano player for a show that went to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It was written by a guy in town who did double duty. He wrote musicals, and also he was Chef Brockett on a show called Mr. Rogers. And he put these shows together and hired cheap labor, which were college students. And I got the job, went my freshman summer to Jackson Hole, caught the show business bug. And then even though I was an English major and kept up my studies, got a B.A. in English, I was bit by the show biz bug. So that's what I wanted to do. And Don Brockett had a show that went to Off-Broadway. It closed in 3 days, but out of that show came a friendship with one of the guys in the show named Bert Lloyd from Altoona, Pennsylvania. We put together an act called Bert and Marty because the show closed, so there was nothing else to do for the summer. And I played with Bert as a duo all through my college years. Then we went to New York, and when I graduated to make our fame and fortune, we did pretty well. We went to a place called the Catskill Mountains. Now, people in Detroit might know the Catskill Mountains. It was the mountains of New York, where they used to have a lot of hotels that had shows, you know, comedians and singers and dancers, Danny Kaye and Jerry Lewis.
And all like the that. Jewish families are vacationing there.
Exactly,
it's like the other Holy Land. It's the other Holy Land.
Exactly. And so I went up there, and we did pretty well. We won the Best New Act in 1974. And we thought we were on our way, you know, even though, you know, we were a pretty cornball group. We did these dance with bottles on our head to the Fiddler on the Roof, and sang songs from West Side Story, and did medleys of very contemporary groups like the Carpenters. And, you know, so we were,
at that time, that's contemporary. Okay.
Exactly. So we were your typical variety show duo. And everything was going fine. We did an act in New York City. We were living together in a hotel, you know, for a season there together. You know, we were just like roommates and buddies and trying to make our way. And then Bert, who was a Methodist, decided to go to this little place in town called the Rock Church, which was a heavy Pentecostal, on-fire, born-again Christian church, you know, the real holy roller type of a place. And I was kind of horrified that he went, but when he came back, someone had stolen Bert and replaced him with this gospel-preaching, Bible-quoting, praying giant that I had never met.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, he was out in the streets talking about Jesus, and he was talking about Jesus to me, and it really hindered Bert and Marty, I have to say.
Because, oh, I'll bet.
Our career was all of a sudden taking second place to this Jesus person. Now, of course, as I joke, and I'm sure you've joked before, every Jew knows that Mr. and Mrs. Christ had a little boy named Jesus.
Yeah, Joseph and Mary Christ.
Right, exactly. And ever since he was born, it's been nothing but trouble for us, right? So,
well, you know, what I'd like to do is I want to come back to the story of how Bert's coming to know Jesus personally was such a traumatic thing, but how eventually that began launching a new direction. But what I'd like to do, I really want our Jesus Made Me Kosher listeners to hear some of your music. So the first thing I wanted to give people a taste for is this song, O Lord, Our Lord. And it's just so beautiful and worshipful. As it's playing behind us, anything you want to say to set it up for us?
Well, this is it starts with a Hebrew chant from Psalm number 8, and then it's just music to Psalm number 8 that I wrote and play quite often in my concerts.
Here we go, Marty Goetz, O Lord, Our Lord.
When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you ordain. What is man that you are mindful of him, and the Son of Man that you visit him? O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all of thee. O Lord, how excellent is your name, O Lord, our Lord. How excellent is your name in all of the earth.
That's our dear brother Marty Goetz, singing Psalm 8, O Lord, Our Lord. And by the way, before we go too far, folks, you can learn more about Marty, his music ministry. And Marty, can they also obtain your music through MartyGoetz.com?
Absolutely.
Let me spell it out because people might know Goetz. Okay. MartyGoetz. Let me say that again for our folks. MartyGoetz.com, MartyGoetz.com. Gorgeous music, Marty.
Thank you. And by the way, in the beginning of this interview, when you were talking about a box of chocolates and you like to know what you're getting, and that you said that nice compliment about our albums, and I made a little silly joke about eating just one, please forgive me that I stepped on your lovely compliment with my flippant little attempt at humor. I really appreciate your kind words.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. We're mishpacha. We're brothers. We this is what we do.
You know what it is? It's all that Catskill training. It's like you got to have a joke.
Yep. I gotcha. The only problem is it's a half hour. We got a half hour to do everything.
That's
Let's fast forward a little bit. Your friend and colleague, Bert Lloyd, had been raised very nominally Christian. Now he's come back from the Rock Church and he is on fire for the Lord. Obviously, you're a nice Jewish boy. Well, emphasis on Jewish, and what do you do about this friend of yours? So tell us what happened, because things began to really spiral.
Yeah, Bert was a great guy, but he drove me crazy because, you know, whatever Bert did, he did on fire, you know, and I'm a little more laid back, and he just it was pretty obvious he wanted me to be a believer, and he wanted me to know all his friends at a church, and And I just, it just got too much for me. So I broke up Bert and Marty, went my own way and started playing saloons and piano bars. You know, I would sit in a bar and just play requests and play, you know, songs all night long till about 2 a.m. And I was, you know, I was pursuing a darker path. You know, I didn't want any of this God stuff. I just wanted to be a young man in New York City and all that entails, and pursue this show business dream that I had. But it still bothered me that Bert and all of his friends seemed to be so happy with this person, Jesus, you know. And as a Jewish man, I just rejected it outright, but I didn't really know why. So I bought myself a Bible, and I started reading the Bible a little bit. It didn't make all that much sense to me at the beginning, but I was very provoked. You know, you quoted Saul of Tarsus. You quoted Paul talking about the gospel is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, also the Gentile. And he, later on in that same letter to the Romans, he writes, you know, that he wanted to magnify his ministry to provoke to jealousy those who were his kinsmen. And even though Bert wasn't my kinsman, according to the flesh, he still provoked me to jealousy. Because I didn't want Jesus, but I wanted to know what it was that made these people so, what made them tick, what made them seem so happy without any help from foreign substances or alcohol or you know, or promiscuity or any of the things that I was pursuing in New York City. And so I just kept reading. And eventually, my career kind of came to a point where I just knew I wasn't going to go anywhere more in New York, and I decided to move to Los Angeles. And Bert had a friend out there named Annie, and she's one of the people who had been praying for me with Bert all these years. So I moved to Los Angeles, and all the way, I just could not get the thought of Jesus out of my head because, you know, Jimmy Carter was president, and he was talking about being born again, and this was a new term to me, you know. And I just was provoked by it, first to anger, then to jealousy, and then to the point where I started reading the Bible myself. And the more I read, I finally started reading about Jesus, you know, or Yeshua, of course, that's his Hebrew name is, and I'm sure you refer to him as Yeshua. Yeshua HaMashiach is his title, HaMashiach, the Messiah, Yeshua, his name. But, of course, I didn't know that at the time. All I knew was Jesus, and so I read about it. And the more I read about him, the more I was looking for reasons to not believe in him. But if you open the Bible, especially the Gospel of Matthew, which is written by a Jewish man to Jewish people about a Jewish man.
Wow. Reading the Gospel, reading about Yeshua, and trying to find reasons to not believe in him is like trying to ski uphill. Right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so the more I read, the more I see, well, let's see. Well, I don't believe in him. Well, he's not Jewish. Well, yes, he is. He celebrated all the festivals, Passover, and even Hanukkah. He didn't celebrate, as I say, Christmas. He celebrated Hanukkah. And, and the more I read, the more I saw that he was a good Jew, a better Jew than I was. He was good to his mother, better than I was to my Jewish mother, you know. So really? he was just everything I rejected about him. I saw, well, that I don't. He certainly meets the qualifications as a good Jewish man. So the question is he Messiah or not? And I found myself asking God, you know, looking up and saying, is he or isn't he? And so I'm in California. I take my songs around. I was writing songs with my cousin at the time. We took the songs around. He wasn't there. He was in New York, but I would take the songs around, and then during the day, I'd read the Bible. And the more I read, the more I wanted to just read and find out about him, and it started to move upon me so much that my friend Annie one day took me to hear a guy at the beach, and the guy happened to be a man named Hal Lindsey, who some people might know. He wrote a book called The Late Great Planet Earth.
You think?
Yes, exactly. And you would find interesting, when they did the communion, he asked a guy named Gideon to come up and do the communion. And I thought, here goes the Christian communion thing. And the guy Gideon gets up and says, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz, barei pri hagafen. And he prays in Hebrew.
Wow.
Prays in Hebrew. over the communion. I knew I was in trouble then. so they make a long story end. She took take me, or at least a long story begin. Mm-hmm. She took me to a place called the Vineyard, which was an offshoot of Calvary Chapel, started by a man named Chuck Smith in California. This is all the late days of the Jesus movement. And finally, it all kind of came together. He preached. I heard. I walked forward. They gave me a Bible. I said the prayer. And they welcomed me to the family of God. And like every other Jewish boy who's ever came to Jesus, I said, "Oi, how am I going to tell my mother?
How am I going to tell mom and dad?" That's right. Hey, was
it? That was it, 1978.
Okay. Well, you beat me by 3 years. But was that the West LA Vineyard near UCLA? They met near UCLA?
It was out in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay.
No, actually, that one was later. Was a little later.
Oh, okay. Actually, you have to say it was like the San Fernando Valley, but that's beside the point. Well, let's do this. I want to give people another little taste of chocolate, and so from Psalm 122, for Zion's sake. Again, folks, you're listening to Marty Goetz on Jesus Made Me Kosher. Enjoy this Psalm 122.
Jerusalem, hear Yeshua cry. How I long to gather you to me. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Messiah.
For Zion's sake, Marty Goetz. And folks, again, you can find his music at martygoetz.com. That's MartyGoetz.com. One long word, martygoetz.com. And Marty, we just have a couple minutes left, but you went on after surrendering your life to Yeshua to continue in music, but now your gift is given as a gift back to the Lord, and you've ministered in some pretty diverse and wonderful places.
Well, you know, the first person, one of the first people who ever, one of the first songs I ever heard that was about Israel was Exodus. And the words to that were written by Pat Boone. And I happened to get a job working for his daughter, Debbie Boone, who had a big song called You Light Up My Life. And about a year after I became a believer, I started playing piano for her. And that lasted quite a while, and through her, I met a lot of different people, Pastor Jack Hayford and people like that, and eventually, then I started doing my own music. When Jenny and I married, my wife Jennifer is from New York, that talk about the Holy Land. She's from New York, and she's also a Jewish believer, and we started our music work together about the middle 80s and started recording our own albums, and through that, we got to be with Greg Laurie out in Riverside, California, and he kind of helped us do a lot of things, and we got to play with Dr. Billy Graham, as you mentioned, in Central Park through a Jewish brother named Michael Rodelnik gave him our name, and we got a chance to play with him in Central Park. As a matter of fact, I go probably two or three times a year to a place called The Cove in North Carolina, which is the Billy Graham Training Center, and I help lead music for the seminars there.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
We have had the opportunity to be with just about everybody on the planet that has to do with preaching the gospel. But at this point, we're in Nashville, Tennessee. We have a daughter named Misha, our one and only, and we're just seeking the Lord for the next steps with what we do. As a matter of fact, just to say quickly, the fellow who did the orchestrations on our albums, some of the most beautiful orchestrations I've ever heard, named Tom Howard. He's a wonderful musician that's been with Christian music for many, many years. He just passed away about 2 years ago.
Oh, I did see that in your newsletter. Oh, well, the music is letting us know that we're out of time. Marty Goetsch, thank you so much for giving your time to Jesus Made Me Kosher today. Again, folks, you can find him and his beautiful music at MartyGoetsch.com. God bless you.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.